Jump shot. It goes. Zach Randolph does it again. 3-point game. They've got to go for three now. No choice. Conley for three. Ties it up.
First team all defense. First team all defense.
Here's Gasol from outside. Tony Allen. Shot clock at four. Randolph puts it up. Puts it in.
You are Locked On Grizzlies, your daily Memphis Grizzlies podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Welcome into the Locked On Grizzlies podcast. As always, I'm your host, Mark King, for the show. Wednesday edition of the show today, as keeping in rhythm with all the other episodes this week, a better late than never, I've been saying, with Amari, my show on Monday. And now, Joe Mullenix, site manager of Grizzly Bear Blues, joins us on Wednesday night. So usually do this on Tuesday night, but it was New Year's Eve, so we did not. We spent time with our families because we both have kids, and that's what we do. So nonetheless, Joe, what's going on, man?
Not too much. We were just talking before we went on live. Talking about how crazy it is during this time of year. You know, you almost lose count and sight of what day it is.
Yes.
And you're not actively working. I'm a teacher and football coach, so I've been off. I was off last week and this whole week here. So I've been on daddy daycare duty, and it's enjoyable. You love your children, but at the same time, we're both kind of at the stage, it sounds like, where we're like, okay, you can go back to school now.
Yes, 100%.
We can get back into a routine.
Yeah, that's I tried to call the school and get them to take my kids back today, but no one answered, so I'm at a loss still. So yeah, it's great. No, it really is great being able to spend time with the kids. But if anybody who has kids out there, they know what we're talking about. There's a point where they just like, especially if you have siblings, obviously. Right. We have a 9-year-old and a 5-year-old, so it's even a little worse, because a 9-year-old likes to do things that the 5-year-old doesn't like to do. He's a boy, she's a girl. He likes to play Minecraft and video games, and she doesn't really like to do that. And then when she tries to do that, it's just a whole mess. This gets to a point where you gotta have time away from each other. I took my kid to the grocery store with me today just to get away from the other one. So that's what we did today. It's thrilling.
No, that makes sense.
Yes.
My 4-year-old, I have a 4-year-old and a 1-year-old, and my 4-year-old today decided that it would be a good idea to hit the 1-year-old in the head with a Mrs. Potato Head.
Perfect.
That was some of the drama in the Mullenix household on New Year's Day. So
2020, yes.
New year, new us, I guess, continuing the process of parenthood.
It is a process. That is for sure. We were talking about also before we started recording, negotiating bedtime and brushing teeth is always just it's a new adventure every day. I'm glad our oldest is old enough now we can just say go to bed, and he just goes to bed. He just does his thing and he just leaves the room. But nonetheless, all the other kids, if you have kids out there, you know exactly what we were talking about. If you don't have kids, shout out to the kids, baby. If you don't have kids, well, guess what? That's what you get to look forward to. I promise. We really do love our children.
With your life to not have children, you can just enjoy feeling correct in your life opinion there as we complain a little bit about ours. So
absolutely. And to all the single, not single, but all the stay-at-home moms or stay-at-home dads out there, shout out to you guys, because there's just zero chance I could ever do that. So
me too.
Just shout out
it's
to
amazing
you guys. That's crazy. Yeah, it is an insane amount of work for saving an incremental amount of money. But either way, let's talk about Grizzlies. We spent 4 minutes now talking about our kids, and we will talk about Grizzlies on the show, I promise. I do want to start. You did a top 10 Grizzlies of the decade list, which caused quite the conversation, not only online, but also at the game Sunday night. There was a bunch of us media members talking about it. Who we had and where we had them. A lot of people were saying that Z-Bo is number one and that's all there is to it. And I am one of those people. But you didn't have Z-Bo one, though. Is that right? I think I saw your list. Would you have Mark one?
I had Mark one.
So this is your chance to defend yourself, Joe Mullenix.
I've heard of all the brouhaha that has developed. I know John Roser and David Cobb and others at the game Sunday night. There was a lot of conversation, and I appreciate everybody that did participate in that. Obviously, Mark, you're one of the 25 that voted, and I don't regret it because I'm kind of proud. You know, and I know you know this. I put a lot of myself into GrizzlyBearBlitz.com, and I kind of feel like that was a good end of the decade for me. A nice little tie a ribbon on the last 10 years of the Grizzlies, and I've been covering them with GBB for 7 of those 10 years. So most of it, I was there as a blogger, and then obviously I joined right at the beginning there in the 2010-2011 season. So it was a lot of work, about 5,000 words across 3 articles and a podcast that we recorded after I finished it. But at the same time, it was really good to put a bow on that decade of the Grizzlies. And I'm glad a lot of folks, it sparked a lot of conversation, I know, so that's good. That was the point of it, in part. To answer your question, your first one, yeah, I did have Mark, and I completely understand if you had Zach Randolph. To me, it has to be Zach or Mark. And I do think that Zach is a worthy number one. I definitely would not argue vehemently against it. Zach Randolph is Memphis, and I've said it multiple times, whether it's on the radio or, you know, with you on the podcast or on the blog. I think I wrote it in the actual piece itself, and those are all still up at GrizzlyBearBlues.com. Highly recommend you go check those out. Just make me feel a little better about the 12 hours I spent doing all that. I think I wrote it. If you didn't experience it, if you didn't feel it, then you probably think everybody's crazy that talks about it. Like, if you read, Sane's a great example, Anthony Sane, who works for the Grizzlies, maven of SI.com, or, Roser works for Grind City Media now. There's so many folks who would, when this conversation came up, they're like, how is it not Zach? And I completely get that perspective, because if you were there for that 2011 playoff series, which I wasn't, you know, that was right before we moved to Memphis. We moved there in the summer of 2011, but I watched it on TV. And I know, obviously, a lot of folks lived it live. But if you weren't there for the peak of grit and grind, Zach Randolph skipping off the court after eliminating the Los Angeles Clippers, I was in the building. I was there for that. And if you felt it, you completely get it in terms of that guy being that city. And I compared it to a love story, and it really is. You know, there's legitimate love between both the player and the city there that you don't get in professional sports very often. And I think that it really is important to point that out, and that makes Zach worthy. The angle that I took, and one of the interesting things about the voting process in general, was whatever, you know, I left it broad on purpose. You know, what do you value in your Grizzlies fan experience? I put Mark ahead of Zach because I thought Mark was the better player. I thought Mark impacted the game on both ends of the court. The defensive player of the year, obviously, is a major nod to that. But he also was an All-NBA selection multiple times. He was an excellent passer of the basketball, facilitator. He could score when he needed to. And I know that's why one of the knocks against Mark is he didn't do it enough. But he was able to dominate the game across all levels and facets of it. Zach was not. And that was the deciding factor for me. But if you look at it from the perspective that obviously most people did, and it's truly, you know, the Memphis-Zach relationship, and that's not to diminish. Zach Randolph, when he was going offensively, somebody said it on Twitter, when you fed him the ball on the block, you could feel the forum, the FedEx forum, getting, you know, antsy. You could hear them starting to cheer because they knew he was going to go to work. You know, when Zach was going offensively, especially the 2011 playoff push, he was pretty much unstoppable himself. You know, it was like LaMarcus Aldridge, but on steroids in terms of what he can do offensively. So I do believe that you have to tip your cap to Zach in that way. But for me, I prioritized who I thought the better player was. And I think Marc Gasol is the better all-around basketball player. That doesn't mean that he's not more important to Memphis than Zach is. Zach clearly is that. And I think Zach's a worthy number one, but on my list, I went Mark.
Yeah, I mean, you know, David and I, John and Roser and Sane, Mari, we're all sitting there waiting for going to the locker room Sunday night. We're all in the same conversation. And David Kopp goes, you know, I think you can, you know, you can make a case for really any of the core four to be one. Like, it really depends on how you look at it, whether you, you know, whether you valued that tenacity that Tony Allen had, or whether you valued that the point guard skills and the orchestration that Mike Conley did, all those things. And like you mentioned, it really is how you felt. And I think that we all can all agree that the core four are 1, 2, 3, and 4, but you can reasonably make a case for any of those guys. One, now I chose Zach just because it is an emotional connection. You know, I just remember, you know, this was before I started covering the Grizzlies as well. And I don't even know what year that I started that in the decade, but you know, it, for me, you know, seeing, you know, whenever Tony Allen goes out and pops Zebo's jersey, and you just, like you mentioned, you know, when he gets it on the block, it's going in. He's never come back out anywhere else. And it just, you know, the joy that you have that you're watching him play, and the memories, you know, that you kind of get. And I was in a lot of those playoff games as well in the building, just like you were. And just, it really is something that it will be hard to replicate. And obviously the Grizzlies are well on the way, but it will be difficult to get back what they had with those guys on the court. I mean, I have a 10-foot Zebo poster from outside the Forum hanging in my office now. Like, if that's not a fan of, I mean, it really is, like, that's as good as it gets. So, but again, I think you're right. Like, you can make a case for any of those guys to really be number one. It just depends on what you, how you view it and kind of see it. Let's do this. Let's take a quick break. We'll be right back. We'll continue this conversation. We'll pick right up where we left off right after the break. Welcome back to the show. Talking Grizzlies top 10 of the decade, a list that Joe Monix put together over at Grizzly Bear Blues, asked a bunch of media members to vote on it. And that's kind of what we're discussing. Again, picking right where we left off. You know, you can make a case for all those guys to be number one. You know, I think that we could agree that all those guys are 1 through 4 though at that point. And it's just kind of how you see them and how you look at those different people. Cause I had a lot of guys come at me and go, oh, why, how is Mike Conley second? Or how is Tony Allen fourth? Or right. Any of those type of things.
No, I agree. And I do believe that, again, it comes down to your perspective.
Right.
Tony Allen, grit and grind doesn't exist without Tony Allen.
Sure,
and
absolutely.
You can very easily argue, and I don't mean disrespect to TA, Tony Allen's the worst basketball player of the four of them. Like, it's not
particularly
close.
Well, it's not even close. It's not even close.
And I did write about this in the article, you know, the idea of Tony Allen getting a statue outside of FedEx Forum or having his number retired, that happens nowhere else in the NBA.
Nowhere.
Like, if Zach Randolph had stayed in Portland and had the career arc that he did and the success that he did, Zach probably gets his number retired by Portland. Maybe they don't do the statue. That's a little bit deeper meaning. But I do think that he could get his number retired. Zach Randolph, in terms of his numbers, you could argue he's a Hall of Fame basketball player. Same thing with Marc Gasol. There's a very real possibility that Marc Gasol could be the first, you know, primary Grizzly Hall of Famer. You know, Powell will probably get in one of these days, but I doubt Powell goes in as a primary Grizzlies guy. It's probably the Lakers. So, you know, Mark could be in that mix too. Mike, maybe not so much. Mike doesn't have the accolades that Mark and even Zach do. But I do think that when you look at their careers, it's those three in terms of basketball. And then Tony's at the bottom, and it's not relatively close. But at the same time, the all heart, grit, and grind interview with Rob Fisher, that doesn't happen. You know, that's Tony Allen. That's where an entire organic philosophy that dominated and really defined that era, not just for the Grizzlies. I think that's something people also that didn't live in Memphis or didn't have the connection to the team, they don't understand. That became the city's mantra. Like, that wasn't just the Grizzlies. Like, the Memphis Tigers were not particularly good during that decade. They had flashes of success here and there, but it was post Calipari. It was, you know, Josh Pastner, and then obviously Tubby Smith. You know, it wasn't all sunshine and rainbows with the team that's arguably more popular than the Grizzlies in the city. So it became the city's team, and grit and grind really became the mantra of the city. And that civic connection really shined through in Tony Allen. So if you're going off of the idea that your list is based off of importance to the Grizzlies or significance in terms of that era,
which is easily the most successful in the franchise's history to this point, I would say you put Tony Allen too. You know, if you're measuring in that, it's Zach Randolph one, Tony Allen two, and then Mike and Mark are kind of debated at three. It all comes down to your perspective. And like I said, I respect Tony Allen a good bit. He deserved to be a unanimous selection. There were only four of them, and they were the core four. I still can't believe somebody left Rudy Gay off of their list entirely, but you know, that it is what it is.
Look, there are a lot of Rudy Gay haters out there. I get it. I really do. I get it. But, you know, I think Zach's, to go off on a little bit of tangent, like, I think Zach's a Hall of Famer. Like, I really do. Like, I don't know if you remember this. Whenever Zach left and I was at Grizzly Rebels, we did like a whole, we did actually a thank you video, you and I did.
Right.
And, you know, we actually got into an argument with somebody, some guy in Nashville, some writer in Nashville. And his whole basis was isn't built in the sense that he just didn't understand what Zach meant to the Grizzlies. Whenever, because I was like, Zach's a Hall of Famer. Like, if you look at his stats lined up with some other Hall of Famers, they're pretty step in step. So, like, Zach, what he did and what just all those guys did in that era. Like, if you're not here, like, if you didn't live it, it's difficult to understand. Like, it's difficult for someone, like you mentioned, for someone to understand why in the hell Tony Allen, who in I'd say in everybody's mind is not, like, he's not the best one, and he's not by far a Hall of Famer, I don't think at all, was just an average, above average basketball player. Why in hell he deserves his number retired in this arena? But if you lived it, you get it. And so I think it's a big difference what those guys did and everybody else, for sure. One thing is that I put Ja Morant on my list and pretty damn high. I think I put him at six.
You did. You had him at six.
And I'm okay, because I have an affinity for Ja Morant, and I'm okay with that. And this is all, it goes back to how you view it. I viewed it as the amount of talent he has and what he's able to do, I'm not sure the Grizzlies have ever seen. And I think he will be game-changing for this franchise in a lot of different ways. Okay.
What are the key words there, though? What are the key words?
The future. I get it. I get it. Yeah. I think he already has, though. The way the conversation has changed this year and the way people view and talk about the Grizzlies because of Ja Morant in national media.
Yeah. I think this might be an example of the Memphis bubble a little bit. And I don't mean it as disrespect, because I'm very jealous of you that you're still in Memphis. We talked about that when I was down visiting. You know, Northern Virginia is not the most fun place to live, especially compared to Memphis, Tennessee. So I really enjoy Memphis. But I do have a benefit still doing this while being removed from the city, because I can kind of have a different perspective than a lot of other people do. Ja Morant's electricity, right? Everything that is very real about him. I don't dispute anything that you just said, except for the fact that it's all led to them being bumped to one national game on NBA TV.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
They haven't been flexed, and that's without Zion Williamson. That's with ratings being down. That's with all these different issues that they're dealing with across the board, with load management. And why are the ratings low? And yet, the most electrifying rookie that they have, Ja Morant, has been flexed once, and it's on NBA TV against the Rockets. So I hear what you're saying. There's definitely an excitement about the team that we didn't think we'd have at this point. Like, the fact that people are still talking about the playoffs, which is still crazy to me, but the fact that it's still a conversation, that's a testament to Taylor Jenkins. That's a testament to these kids and these veterans that are working extremely hard. You know, it's a testament to the Western Conference being complete trash at the bottom of the conference. But that's not the Grizzlies' fault. You know, they're playing.
Sure.
They're playing the schedule they're playing, and Ja Morant has definitely been the catalyst for a lot of that. But to say that Ja Morant should be there, again, we talk about the beginnings of the decade. OJ Mayo was extremely important to that initial run.
He was on my list, first of all.
Extremely important, but he wasn't on others' lists instead of Ja Morant.
Okay, Vince Carter. That's fair.
Vince Carter, 2017 playoffs. The Grizzlies don't compete with the Spurs. You know, people remember Mike going off. They remember Marc Gasol hitting the big shot at the end of a game to help seal it in the Forum. You know, you remember those things. But if you don't have Vince Carter starting games at the age of 40 and hitting 40% of the threes that he took and being a threat, they don't have the room to work, you know, and to make that series more competitive than it should have been. Tayshaun Prince, how many wings have come and gone through the Grizzlies during that grit and grind era? And the one guy who actually made it kind of work was Tayshaun Prince, who was another veteran wing who is past his prime and ironically is still in the Grizzlies organization now as a key member of that front office. But, you know, what brought Tayshaun to Memphis in the first place was in part the Rudy Gay trade and how he wasn't a ball stopper. He wasn't an issue in terms of stylistic problems. He was able to be malleable and be what Memphis needed him to be in a way that Rudy was not. So, you know, whether it's Tayshaun Prince, whether it's Vince Carter, you know, Courtney Lee gets a bad rep. You know, there's lots of those types of guys that, you know, have played a lot more basketball than John Morant. And I think that there's a very real possibility if the trajectory continues for Ja, he'll be number one on, and I joked with Parker on our podcast this week, if I'm still doing this in 2029, something's gone horribly wrong. But if I'm doing this again and I'm sitting there making the list, John Morant has a pretty good shot at being number one already. You know, 9-10 years from now. I think right now to say he's on that list definitively, I'm going to say the word, I think it's disrespectful to the guy that helped change the process of what it was to be a Memphis Grizzly in terms of competitiveness like Prince did, or in terms of being a player that you can count on as a role player, because that was so rare. You know, one of the takeaways for me from this list is, God, the role players that this team had were just not very good around the court.
That's very true.
So it makes their success even more impressive. I mean, the fact that Vince Carter, who, look at the numbers, and I know you remember this too, he had one good season in Memphis. One of a three-year contract. He played well in one of those three seasons, and he was on our list as one of the top 10 Grizzlies of this decade. Vince Carter, who was 40 years old in that year. So it makes what the core four accomplished that much more impressive. So maybe it's Chris Wallace's fault that Ja Morant.
It is Chris Wallace's fault. Blame him.
We can blame him, I guess.
It's my list. It's my list, damn it, Joe. I can pick whoever I want. I'm just kidding.
That's true.
This is the thing I'll say about Jaren and Ja, who are on a lot of people's lists, is that the end of the decade is just as important as the land. And if you have those guys that just catapult you into another dimension, then I'm going to put them on a list. Either way, it goes back to what you're saying. The amount of guys out there that just weren't that good.
Right.
And you had to put them on, like, yes, for 10, and I'm getting to 7. I'm going, I don't even know. Like, I'm trying to, like, think back in my head, okay, who, you know, like, that is really the ultimate disappointment, is that that core four could have been so much better than it was if you had this front office that there is now back then running this ship and putting some actual players around those guys off the bench. Like, it would have been much, much different. So, in reality, what we've learned from this list building is that it should be more of a disappointment than anything else.
Well, I mean, Jaren Jackson Jr. was number 6. I voted him number 7. He was number 6 on the actual list. And I don't think that's crazy. Like, Jaren has played at least a full season of games now. Jaren was an all-rookie selection. Jaren has shown a real capacity to be a contributor on a good team. You know, if you would put Jaren in Boston or in Philadelphia or somewhere like that right now, he'd probably still be a starter. I do see him as one of the 6 or 7 best players of the decade for Memphis. He's had a large enough sample size, and he's not old enough to drink. That's further evidence of all of this, you know?
Yeah.
I really do struggle with, and it showed in the voting, you know, Jaren Jackson Jr. beat Jamichael by 3 or 4 points in the vote. Then Rudy Gay jumps up almost doubling in the points. So in reality, you could have done a top 5 and stopped it there in terms of
would have
the
been
five
perfectly
players
fine with
that
me.
Really most impacted the decade. But, you know, I thought 10 was a better number, and it gave a shout out to a guy like a Jamichael Green, who is criminally underrated in terms of what he did for the Grizzlies during that decade. Courtney Lee in a similar boat. I think Jamichael was more important than Courtney, but not by much. I think that it was good to do the list the way we did it, but at the same time, it really drives home the fact there were four guys, of course, in particular, and then you have to add Rudy Gay unless you're one of the voters. But there were five total guys that if you put them on other teams, championship teams, you put them in a place where they would be able to be either a rotation player like Tony Allen or a starter like a Mike or a Mark. You know, those are the five that really defined what it meant to be a Memphis Grizzly in the decade.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I think that's a perfect point to it. Let's take another quick break. We'll come back and we will talk about some of the different sides of the Grizzlies of the decade. Welcome back to the show, talking with Joe Mullenix, site manager of Grizzly Bear Blues, like we do every single Wednesday on this show. Want to talk a little about just a few things before we get out of here. And first of all, why do you hate the Grizzlies making the playoffs so much, Joe? That's the first one. I'm so excited about the Grizzlies potentially. I mean, I don't even care about that pick anymore. Boston can have it.
Oh, I don't care about the pick either.
I know you don't care.
Yeah, I don't care about the pick anymore because John Morant's here. You know, if they
if
they had wound up with R.J. Barrett at three or something like that, or, you know, and that would be a little bit more of a concern. But John Morant's a surefire superstar as there is from this draft at this point. And that includes Zion Williamson, who apparently they're teaching how to walk and run again.
Does that not scare the shit out of you, though?
It scares me a lot.
They're teaching Zion how to walk? Like,
I mean, what happened?
Oh my God, dude.
I've heard it with other athletes before, so it's not like it's unprecedented.
Scary, dude.
But at the same time, it's I think it's fair to say Ja is on a better trajectory at the moment. That might change in 2 months.
Sure.
But as we record tonight, Ja is probably on track to be the best rookie out of this class. But anyway, it's not about not wanting to convey the pick or not convey it. That doesn't matter anymore. To me, what matters is not putting unnecessary pressure on this group of guys. If you can look at it, and in fairness to most people, this is the perspective. If you can look at it from the sight line of, okay, they're whatever it is, a game and a half, 2 games out of the 8th seed right now in the terrible bottom of the Western Conference. San Antonio struggling. Their schedule is really difficult. There's all sorts of ways you can talk yourself into them possibly being the 8th seed by the end of this month. Cool. As long as you understand that if Dallas calls and offers Justin Jackson and a second round pick for Jay Crowder, you make that trade. Or as long as you are cool with the Solomon Hill, who's been a pretty important role player for them, he's worked his way up to being worth it to a contender to send out, you know, a bad contract and a second rounder or two to make it worth Memphis's while, you still do that trade. Like, this changes nothing in terms of them being an asset acquisition mode. Because if you decide to be a stealth buyer, like I read something about Oklahoma City possibly being a stealth buyer because they're better than people thought they would be. OKC is a little bit different because they have so many veterans. They have Gallinari still, obviously Chris Paul. You know, that's a little bit different. I don't hate OKC's trying to make the playoffs. Memphis is young. Memphis is inexperienced. Memphis has rookies like Ja Morant and Brandon Clark that have never played a full NBA season. They're going to hit the rookie wall at some point, just like everybody does, and they're going to have periods of inconsistency. And I don't want to see ever again people clamoring for, oh, well, let's trade Jaren Jackson Jr. because he played poorly for 2 weeks in November. You know, our fan base, and you know it to be true, Mark, we could be on Twitter watching a game, or we could be in the comments on a blog post, and somebody will say, you know, John's really struggled the last month or so. Do you think we could maybe trade him for none from Miami? He's playing so much better. Shut up. Enough. All right? I don't want any unnecessary drama, unnecessary pressure. If they make the playoffs on their own after trading Crowder, after possibly trading Hill, getting something for Josh Jackson miraculously, whatever the case might be, as long as they handle things the way that they've handled them since the summer, and they are in asset acquisition mode, and they're making trades and moves, thinking about the future, and the ultimate goal of figuring out who the hell can play next to Ja Morant, Jaren Jackson Jr. long term. If that all equates to them going and being the 8th seed and getting swept by LeBron and the Lakers, go with God. That would be awesome. Good for them. That's remarkable overachievement in terms of what people thought they would be able to do. I don't want it to be the expectation. I don't want people to say, let's trade Grayson Allen and a couple of those second rounders we got for a veteran wing. I don't want it to be anything along those lines. It has to be within the realm and the world that we live in. They're overachievers. Right. They are still going to trade pieces away that, in theory, because Jay Crowder has been struggling a lot, but in theory, and I'll use Solomon Hill again as the example, losing Solomon Hill from this team right now would hurt the Grizzlies. It just would, because Solomon Hill has been a contributor and he has performed well. I don't care. I don't care. Solomon Hill's not going to be on the team next year. You need veterans. I get that. But Solomon Hill's not going to be the guy that's going to be sticking around unless he agrees to a pretty hefty pay cut from the Grizzlies. And I think he's earned an opportunity to go test the market. He doesn't owe Memphis anything. If he can go out there and get a Vince Carter-esque deal of $3 or $4 million a year, the Grizzlies would be crazy to pay that, in my opinion. But somebody might do that for Solomon Hill within their mid-level exception that's trying to compete for a championship. So you owe it to yourself, your organization, the young guys that you've brought in an intelligent way, credit to the Kleinman and company, you need to stay the course. As long as you do that, if you make the playoffs, awesome. I don't want to add a burden of expectation to this young group. That's where I stand on it.
I absolutely agree with that. I mean, at 100%, you go out and just have fun. If that means that, if that's what, if having fun in this season and you still do everything you need to do so far as trading Jay and Solomon, all those type of guys. If all that happens and you still make the playoffs, fantastic. You go have fun and enjoy it, but do not sacrifice your long-term plans for a short-term gain. Or don't, you know, the only thing I'll say about the Grizzlies being some type of stealth buyer, and I'm going to do a whole show on this about trades, is I think the Grizzlies should go out and be actively looking for that wing, young wing. And if it costs you Dylan Brooks or something to get a young wing, a Jason Tatum or something like somebody like that, I don't think they're going to get, but I'm just giving them out as an example. If that's what it costs to get that young wing, who is a piece for the long-term future, you do that now. If you're able to get someone that's about to enter free agency and a Malik Beasley for some pieces, not that I think it's going to cost
a lot.
Joe Harris, yes, Joe Harris, a perfect
in
example.
In theory, you could do Jay Crowder and a couple of second rounders or a second rounder for Joe Harris.
Correct.
And
if you could go do that, you'd do that right now.
And you could get Joe Harris. You would get his bird rights. You could go over the cap and re-sign him. You could give him an extra year if that was something you were interested in. That would be the kind of deal
Correct.
That I would be interested in. If it's someone that you have acknowledged and identified, Malik Beasley from Denver, you know, it's someone that you've picked out and said, hey, this is a guy that we're comfortable with investing in, then go get him now. If you think that it gives you negotiating windows that, and advantages, that would be the exception.
I agree. I mean, I'm all for – I just don't think you're going to be able to get those guys in free agency. That's why I say you got to go get them now. While you do have assets, you got to go get them now when you can. You know, a lot of those guys are restricted free agents. If you can control their, you know, can control their future, so to speak, and you can match offers, things like that, or you can max them before anybody else. All those type of things, you got to go do those deals now because I don't think you have. I don't think John Jaren enough star power even still to pull out free agents. Excuse me to this team. I just don't think.
But the good,
I don't think it's yet there yet.
The good news is when it comes to somebody like a Joe Harris, let's just stick with him because he's kind of been a popular guy who would make sense. He's a shooter. He can defend. He's smart. He kind of fits the model of what this front office is trying to do. You could overpay Joe Harris for 2 years because everybody talks about the Grizzlies having a max contract slot. They're not getting Brandon Ingram. They could offer Brandon Ingram all sorts of different things in restricted free agency and New Orleans is going to match. It was going to match. That's going to
happen. It'd be cool if they didn't, though, right?
It would be. But my point
they
is...
They will always match,
the
though.
The nice thing about Jaren Jackson Jr. having 2 years before his first max contract, okay, right? So he'll have two team options. They've already opted into one of them. So they have 1 year after this one before they have to think about paying Jaren. You could give Joe Harris a two-year, $30 million contract. And that sounds stupid on paper. Like, you're like, what in the world are you doing giving Joe Harris $30 million over 2 years? That doesn't hurt the Grizzlies at all. You're still able to pay Jaren. Obviously, the other deals that they signed are all descending, so money will still be okay on that front. They have a two-year window where they can overpay guys, or they can take on a Gorgui Dieng or Jang, excuse me, from Minnesota. If Minnesota offers a first round pick, just trying to free up some cap space to get rid of him, do it. You know, that's another thing that we're talking about in terms of that asset acquisition. You know, they have cap flexibility that doesn't necessarily need to be used in the manner of going out and trying to get one max contract player. You can overpay a Joe Harris for 2 years. You can sign somebody in unrestricted free agency for 2 years to a deal that nobody else would offer that amount of money. But if you do it for 2 years and you have Jaron getting his max contract after that, you still have the flexibility to come with Jaron and Ja eventually, and even Brandon Clark having to eventually be paid here in the next few years down the road.
I totally agree. And let's not forget, the Grizzlies are going to have something about, I believe, between 52 and 55 million in cap space this summer. So, like, you know, this doesn't affect them at all. They could go do that to a couple wings if they wanted to in the summer. So my point for them is just to actively seek those deals, just like your point is as well. Just actively seek those deals that betters your franchise. And if you make the playoffs in the meantime, so be it. Let's be happy. Let's have fun. Let's watch John Morant be awesome. Either way, Joe, we're out of time, man. It's been a whole show talking about our kids, Grizzlies, and trades. I appreciate you doing it again. We'll do it again next week. Again, if you're not already following Joe Monix on Twitter, go follow him at Joe Monix on Twitter. Joe, what can people read from Grizzly Bear Blues this week that's interesting besides the top 10 Grizzlies of the decade?
Sure. Well, I wrote about David Stern, and I'm sure you'll probably talk about this at some point, but shout out to David Stern. Definitely, if not the most, one of the most influential sports people of not just the past decade, but the past century in American sports. The NBA was almost dead, and David Stern essentially saved it. So I wrote a little piece about David Stern over on the blog. Jordan Peterson has a piece about Kyle Anderson that's out that's going to be really good. Enjoy that. Parker Fleming wrote about things that the Grizzlies need to focus on in the next decade, kind of a counter to the all-decade list. There's lots of good stuff over at GBB. There's podcasts coming out every few days. So make sure you're subscribing there as well as to Locked On here. Lots of good content, as I mentioned, in my Best of GBB Twitter thing I do, including this great podcast. There's never been a better time to be a Grizzlies fan in terms of content. There's tons of great stuff to read and listen to, and I'm just glad that GBB is a part of that for a lot of folks. So grizzlybearblues.com, stick with us. Obviously, with the holidays, things don't slow down a little bit. But definitely this week we've ramped back up with our end of the decade list, and obviously the Grizzlies picked back up in Sacramento on Thursday night. So it's going to be a lot of fun, and hopefully folks stick with us.
Absolutely, man. If you're not already subscribed to the podcast, like Joe mentioned, go subscribe to the podcast on whatever platform you're using, Spotify, Stitcher, Overcast. If you're in Apple iTunes, make sure you go leave a review. It really helps the show in the rankings. I would appreciate it as well. Joe, let's do it again next week, man.
Looking forward to it, Mark. Thank you, buddy.
Appreciate it, man.